You're listening to the Scottish Football Forum's podcast Euros Special, the home of Euro 2024 banter.
From Glasgow to Berlin, we're here to see the Scot win. And now we're scoring the goals, scoring the goals. And we score one or two, McGann will score a few. And then we'll beg you some more, we're going to Germany. We're going to Germany. We're going to Germany.
Hello and welcome to the latest Euros throwback edition of Scottish Football Forum's podcast with the host, John Bleasdale. Normally we'd be looking back at tournaments Scotland qualified to compensate for not making them, but now in an era where we're qualifying regularly for Euros again, let's look back at two tournaments that we didn't qualify for as we reminisce in the finals in 2000 and 2004. And I'm delighted to be joined by the throwback regulars, Chris and Scott. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast, how are you?
Good, eh? Looking forward to this. Some good memories of tournaments we weren't at, but I can enjoy it anyway.
Well, so I was at Euro 2004, so Scotland weren't, but I was. So it's quite good to look back on it.
Yeah, we'll certainly have good fun with it. I mean, we obviously didn't qualify for either tournament, but in 2000 we were desperately unlucky in that playoff against England. We lost 2-0 at Hampden, but I think we were even unlucky in that game. I remember Kevin Gallagher had an effort that David Seaman saved at 1-0, and then at 2-0, Billy Dodds hits the bar. I mean, we also all talk about the Christian Daly moment in the game down at Wembley where we outplayed them, but I think those two were just as key in the overall standings, and we played so well at Wembley, and I think Tony Adams said afterwards, had that gone to extra time, Scotland were winning that.
Aye, definitely. Like what you say, we were unlucky. Certainly in the first leg, because Scholes really should have been shackled by Paul Lambert, but he was injured. I've said before, that jaw. You don't tackle somebody with your jaw. That wasn't a penalty. Albert's dived. Albert's cost us. And see what we're at it, just as a kind of bring it up to date. See if Barry Ferguson thinks it's okay to kick Callum McGregor at the weekend. Traitor. We need him for Euro 2024. So, don't start that.
So, listen. If Paul Lambert wants to tackle somebody with his jaw, then that's up to him. It's an interesting one because me and Chris have went back and forth on this one a few times, and I have looked back in the challenge. It is a kind of hard one to kind of really put into full, you know, one way or the other, because he does fly in, but Albert's does kind of leave the knee open to it, which players, especially nowadays, do all the time. You know, they do look to buy the penalty. But it wasn't as clear-cut as I thought the first time. You know, now looking back decades afterwards. But I just, it's the Scott, the Hampden game, I just remember feeling really disappointed that we continued to kind of sloppy goals. You know, it's kind of... And then when you think, listen, it's typical Scotland, you're at your lowest, and then suddenly, out of nowhere, you're at your highest, and then, again, you kind of get low again, because it's not, you just fail that last hurdle, you know, that last tiny bit, because we absolutely pumped them at Wembley. I can remember just thinking this momentum was fully on us, and Craig Brown had totally... one up to Kevin Keegan, which I don't think. I think the main thing that drew them forward was they had star players. They had, you know, world class players, and it managed to see them through in the end. I think we had the better manager. I think we had the momentum, and we had the better team spirit. And I think it was so close, and we probably deserved at least to go into extra time.
Yeah, I think Craig Brown, to be fair, at Wembley did play a tactical masterstroke by because Kevin Gallagher was suspended, and he brought in Neil McCann, but he put McCann out wide because he knew Sol Campbell was playing right back, which is not his position, because Gary Neville was injured. And he learned that Southgate was playing instead of Martin Keown, so he said, right, Don Hutchinson, you got front. And they played a 3-4-3. Barry Ferguson put in such a great performance that night. You know, Craig Brown said, I've heard a lot of Scotland fans say that was one of the best performances by a Scotland player at that point. But
And
obviously, it wasn't.
Neil McCann was at his peak probably at that time in terms of that was before Dick Advocaat was trying to tell to track back all the time. Dick Advocaat ruined Neil McCann in that aspect because he was so disciplined in wanting players to track back. Whereas Neil McCann at that moment in time, if you just let him continuously go forward and attack teams, it just had everybody on toast. And it was, as you say, it was a bastard stroke to bring him in for because he was itching to get into it. And it was just, I thought always liked Hutchison at Scotland. I always thought he gave us something a bit different. And Barry Fergus was probably his peak as well. He never kind of reached the heights that I think many of us thought. Listen, it's a very good career. Let's not make too much about it. But if he'd have done what Lewis did and left and went to Italy, then I think you would have seen him possibly a world class player, possibly. But we'll never know, obviously. And I think if he'd have done the same thing as Lewis did and went to the continent, he would have been at that age, just before obviously his injuries and stuff at Blackburn, he would have been fantastic.
I don't remember the annual England Scotland games, but so my first experience was 96. This game at Wembley is the only time I've seen us dominate England, and we were far better that night than they were. And like you said earlier, like they knew if we got that second goal, we were winning that tie, and to be come that close to it with that. I mean, it was a reaction save. Like, there's no way that David Seaman knew what he was doing with that. It's just pure reaction. And full credit to him for that one. Like, that's the mark of a good goalkeeper. But yeah, again, if this delayed managed to get a header anywhere either side of him, it was in. But we were very close. And we'll come on to another tournament next time. But yeah, it was unusual because it meant that like we'd been to four of the last five tournaments. So this was going to be a tournament that Scotland were at, which was. It became the norm, but we didn't know it at the time.
No.
And it was actually the first tournament I remember watching I had anybody support because the one tournament we didn't get to, I could at least support Ireland in the 90s. But this one, it was even, like, again, I don't remember Euro 88, but half of the podcast group appears to remember Euro 88. But I, like, so this was very much a case of, well, who are we going to support? Actually, before we go on to that, the one game that annoyed me in qualifying was the Czech game because we were 2-0 up against them in qualifying. The Czechs went 100% in that qualifying group, but and it wouldn't have mattered. But to lose a 2-0 lead and for that to lose 3-2 was irritating. We'd still have finished second anyway, given the results. But just like that.
Yeah, it was a bit of a. I think it was the sign of a decent team coming to its end. And as we've discussed before, when we talked about Craig Brown at Christmas, there wasn't a lot of great young players coming through. Ferguson was the exception, but there wasn't many others that were coming through at that point. Yeah, youth was neglected, which is still a bit of a bugbear. Yeah, so Chris, you obviously wouldn't have been able to support Ireland. You wouldn't have obviously been able to support Poland either because they couldn't. Finished second in their group to oust England, ironically. I think Sweden ended up beating them. But there were seven SPL players. It was SPL at the time, or was it six? I can't count here. So Henrik Larsson and Johan Mjelby for Sweden, two guy for Turkey, Vidar Riiseth for Norway, Giovanni Bronckhorst and Arthur Newman for the Dutch. So I think it's fair to say. I think a lot of Celtic fans would have been looking at Sweden, and a lot of Rangers fans would have been looking at the Dutch at that point.
Yeah, I was back in Sweden. I mean, this was 2000, so this was just literally just Henrik was back for his leg break because he'd been out most of the season. Came back for that very last game, which was enough to say, yeah, you can come into the Swedish squad. And fun enough, the two goals that Sweden got in this tournament were Mjällby and Larsson. The two Celtic best players. So
It's
they were
funny
mints.
so.
The rest of the tournament's went were mints, but it was good that the two guys that got the goals were there.
Because there's quite a lot that either beforehand, during, or afterwards that did play in Scotland. I've got a full list here. Obviously, you mentioned a few of these people. So, Tugay, Valharen, Clément, Capuccio, Meyer, the goalkeeper, Berg, Flo, Riiseth, Egan, Gravesen, Frank de Boer, Ronald de Boer, Newman, Van Bronckhorst, Van Hooijdonk, Kontermann, and Van Vossen. I totally forgot that Van Vossen was in the tournament.
Yeah,
Now,
because he'd
obviously,
left Rangers the year before.
yeah, because he was absolutely, let's face it, he was pish for Rangers. But I was obviously concentrating a lot on the Dutch team because there was so many players and they were a very good team, and it was obviously they were a home nation. But yeah, I totally, I looked at the penalties and I saw him, commiserating, and the famous 14 jersey as well. And I was like, I totally blanked out that Van Vossen was even part of that squad.
Do you know
Is it
what?
the
I was
some squad?
that Dutch side also had the best strap. See the black
Yeah,
trim and the black
definitely.
shorts. That was a gorgeous Dutch outfit.
And the home support as well was phenomenal. You just saw orange everywhere, and that strip was that was probably my favorite for that tournament.
They were all copying the Scottish Cup final, of course.
Of course, yeah. They seen the Hampden, and they were. It was a tribute to the Rangers supporters.
At least you're honest and say it was the Rangers supporters and not the marketing reason behind it, but we'll not go there. It's interesting you bring up the strips and your favourite being the Dutch one, Chris, because Craig from FKM podcast, he says that the two Italy ones, I don't agree personally because I think it's just the Kappa thing. I mean, I just maybe that's just West of Central Scotland perception, but
Is that one that the Italian Kappa straps were actually really nice in general. But I because we're just is that whole West of Scotland thing. Kappa is not
So that
a
was my
idea.
two, the Holland, the Dutch one, and the Italian one. I would never, I mean, I couldn't even look at the Italian one. My cousin had it, and he had the body for it. But I could just imagine me trying to play football on that strip would have just been absolutely hilarious and not in a good way. But they managed to pull it off. The Italians are obviously still Roman gods because players like Totti and Del Piero managed to absolutely nail it.
I mean, I like the Slovenia one and all, but that's just because it was green. I mean that like this was Slovenia's first tournament, and they did all right. And that's I mean the Zahavich was a decent
Zahavic was
player.
a stunning player. I totally forgot about him again until I was watching some of this, and he was such a good number 10.
He really was. I mean, because Slovenia were expected to be the whipping boys of this campaign, but they should have beaten Yugoslavia. It's actually ironic. Watching this back, they were 3-0 up against Yugoslavia. Sinisa Mihajlovic, God rest him, had a nightmare of a game. He can makes a mistake at least the third goal, gets himself sent off, and then they bring on Savo Milosevic, who was getting a hard time at Aston Villa a few years earlier, and then he comes on and helps him get a draw. Mihajlovic misses the next game that Yugoslavia win 1-0. Then he comes back and they lose 4-3 in that epic against Spain and lose 6-1. So he had a bit of a stinker of a tournament.
Like Yugoslavia was so much value for money in this tournament. It was brilliant. But the 4-3 game with Spain was my standout in the entire tournament. Just to be going in 3-2 up and injury time and still lose 4-3 was just remarkable. I mean, this is before the days of VAR, so when you get like half an hour of injury time, so like it's not unusual anymore. But back then, it was a phenomenal game to be watching. I remember watching it live as well. It was just brilliant. I mean, you say the 3-8 game against Slovenia as well, and then getting 6-1 later on. But I think it's going to have a great value when I loved it.
Where Milosevic's all of Milosevic's goals in the 6 yard box or there or thereabouts, he was just
Just about it,
tapping every single goal was a tapping, which is less than a few. I would love if Scotland did that this summer. If Scotland had a player they could just tap them in like that, it would be fantastic this summer.
you know what? See the first goal against Slovenia, though. How the hell did he get that? Because it's some weird flick up in the air for him to, like, you're talking about the tapping, but the crate to get it to him in the first place was just like, how's he done that?
The Slovenians just stood. No, watching nobody follow them in. It was remarkable. There was loads of good games in this tournament. I think this is why this is my favourite tournament out of all the Euros. There was 85 goals scored across the 31 games, which in the 5-16 team events is the highest out of the lot. Euro 96 is the lowest with 64. But Group A, Dr. Grant Campbell says that Group A was his favourite group because of the battle mainly between Romania and England. And there were some cracking games in that. England thought that, well, Kevin Keegan, I think he was trying to play it up that they could win it, but when they lost to Romania, he said that they weren't good enough. But that Portugal game was almost as if England made them angry of going two up, and Luis Figo scores that stunning goal into the top corner. I mean, Seaman couldn't even move.
No,
It
he's rooted to
was.
the spot. It's a, that I mean, there was some brilliant goals scored in this, and that's one of the best. One of my takeaways from kind of both these tournaments we're going to speak about was how good Nuno Gomes was. And he obviously got in this. I thought after this tournament, I loved the winning. It followed into the following one as well. But like you say, that Figo goal. And for Portugal to come for 2-0 down and beat England 3-2 was a great start for them. The thing I like about Group A is that the big England-Germany game was the meaningless one in the end because they both went out, and I loved that. I loved the idea that England and Germany both went out at the same time, and Portugal and Romania going through, and it was the way England went out as well. It was beautiful.
And it was probably, you know, these two tournaments that we're talking about are probably Portugal's best squads, even better than the one that actually won Euro 2026,
Undoubtedly.
2016, because you know you still name these players over the two. I mean, obviously Ronaldo came into the next squad for the Euro 2004, but this one you still had, you know, your Caixinhas, your João Pinto, Nuno Gomes, Figo. You know, that for me is when I first really started to take note of Portugal. I remember them humping us 5-0 in the qualifier for the World Cup in 94, but you never, I never seen them much after that. And it was more, this was kind of announced on the international stage for my generation that Portugal were a real threat, and they carried that on ever since.
Well, if you listen to the U96 throwback when we spoke to Tom Lockhart, the Portuguese expert, in U96 said they just weren't ready to go further than what they did. You know, they reached the quarterfinals and then lost to the Czech Republic, but he says that was a tournament maybe too early. They missed out in 98, but this is where they started to peak. And they underperformed in 2002 at the World Cup, but in this tournament they were absolutely tremendous, and so much so that the reserves go and pump Germany 3-0. This is how poor Germany were. Their only moment of quality was Mehmet Scholl's goal against Romania in a game which I thought they were quite lucky to get a draw in. They also didn't perform well against England, but that game against Portugal, they were absolutely terrible. I don't know why Lothar Matthäus kept staying on, especially given the fact he was playing the MLS at the time. I think that's how desperate they were. I don't even remember who the German manager was back then, because it was obviously not Bertie Vogts, and Voller took over after this one.
No,
I can't remember who.
it
And
was
they were holders as well.
yeah. I like, they'd won Euro 96, and they'd won it was holders. And just like, I know that became something as a sort of jinx at the World Cup, but it's never really felt it's as much a jinx at the Euros. But yeah,
Eric
that that's
Rebeck's
true.
his name.
Yeah, Erik
Exactly.
Rebeck.
It's unforgettable.
But when Germany, it's funny when Germany do destruct, and it's not often, but when they do destruct in tournaments, they absolutely just throw out, just set fire to the trash can and throw it out the window. It was crazy because, you know, they were hopeless. And as you say, to lose the way they did so convincingly to Portugal, and I suppose it's just a changing of the guard for both teams. As you say, Matthäus and that generation's, you know, that it should have came to an end before then. But Portugal's just coming into it, just kind of finding their stride. You've got a player like Figo, who's undoubtedly going to be world class, if not already world class by that point. And it's just changing of the tides, and it's just Portugal just absolutely annihilated them.
I mean, for the point that Croatia knocked them out of the 98 World Cup, they obviously qualified for this one, but then were rotten in it. And then was it the following year England pumped them 5-1 in Munich?
Yeah.
Right. It's only kind of after that 5-1 pumping that they actually started picking up again, to the point they made the final of the 2002 World Cup.
But was 2002 more to do with the fact that they had a good luck of the draw? Because your 2004 we'll touch on when we come to it, they weren't particularly great. So I think they benefited from a lot of big teams going out. Like they got South Korea in the semi final, they got USA in the quarter final, and they'd put out obviously. You know, Portugal had been put out by then, Spain had been put out by then, Italy had been put out by then, France had been put out by then. So, you know, I think they benefited from the luck of the draw as much as anything.
The benefit of being the one team that didn't lose to South Korea by a dodgy referee.
That's true.
And Oliver Kahn was particularly good in that tournament as well. So they had a really good goalkeeper, which always kind of helps out in a tournament. So,
I don't know, it probably spilled the ball for the
well,
final.
yeah,
The first goal. I'm
exactly.
so glad Ronaldo scored that second goal. But anyway,
I
that's my
don't know.
tournament.
We covered that last time. So, but Can didn't have the best tournament in this one because he makes an error for one of Conceição's goals. I mean, Conceição was a squad player and then scores a hat trick in that game and starts the rest of the games. But into Group B quickly. So the opening game, Belgium beat Sweden 2-1, and Bart Hoare announced himself. I mean, he was instantly linked with Celtic and ended up saying another Belgian, as Scott talks about, Valharen. And as Chris mentioned, Johan Mjalby scores, but he gets a bit lucky because Philip de Wilde trips out of the ball like Bambi on ice. And then
Mjalby basically walks into it.
He didn't exactly have the best tournament, de Wilde, after that, because in the final game against Turkey, he gets outjumped by Hakan and Suka from the edge of the area. And then he gets himself sent off for hauling someone down. So Belgium didn't do the co-host situation very well, but Italy romped that group with three consecutive wins.
I think they still scored a good goal against them, though. As good as that Italy team were, they still scored a pretty good goal against them.
He did, to be fair. And Turkey got through in second place.
I mean, Turkey were a bit of a surprise package in this tournament, but they then followed it up in the following World Cup. So, I mean, this was a really good Turkey team.
Mm-hmm. And interestingly, in Turkey's first game, there was Scottish representation. Hugh Dallas was the referee. And he also refereed in the Norway versus Yugoslavia. Didn't get any more games after that.
Remember, we used to send referees to the big tournaments?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Funny
enough. Yeah, went down ever since. But yeah.
Hakan Suka, see, he's an American now. He's a political refugee, is he not?
I don't care. Honestly, I've watched a YouTube video about this recently. The Turks cannot stand the guy. They do not talk about him.
And really?
Despite the fact he's got such a great goal scoring record for Turkey, he's obviously got the fastest goal in the third place match.
Somebody mentioned that and that person gets sacked at half time because he mentioned it on live Turkish TV or radio, can't remember which. But yeah, he fell out with the president. I'm not going to butcher his name, I'll kind of know. Erdogan. So he fell out with him, and that was him, person non grata. I don't know if he's still in New York. I mean, a taxi. He used to drive about a taxi. I think he was trying to organize a soccer school somewhere in America. But yeah, at some point he was driving about a taxi.
Such a waste, because he was such a great cycle.
It's crazy.
It's incredible to come down in some footballers. And then Group C, as we kind of touched on already, Spain just got through with goals in 94, 95 minutes in that epic game against Yugoslavia, who nearly won the group. It didn't matter to them then because Norway failed to beat Slovenia the same night, and it meant Yugoslavia went through the head-to-head record. Probably justifiably so, because they scored 7 and Norway only scored 1. But Gaia Mendieta scored one of the goals. I mean, he was at his peak at that point with Valencia, and that Valencia team reached 2 Champions League finals.
And his penalty technique was fantastic. He just watched the keeper, just didn't look at the ball, just looked at where the keeper was going and slight side footed it into the opposite corner. But it's always, do you remember there was a time, i.e., this time, where you always thought, oh, Spain have got a decent team, but they would always just fall, you know, just never ever meet expectations. And then suddenly they obviously blew that out of the water a few years later. But I just remember, that was always Spain. It was always a kind of, oh yeah, they're a good team, but they'll cock it up.
They nearly went until they dominated for about 6 years.
Yeah, they were nowhere near ready at this point, obviously. The group of death was Group D, because you had the Netherlands, France, Czech Republic and Denmark. But the group was done after 2 games. Although, what I will say for the Czech Republic is I thought they were real unlucky in the game against the Dutch. Nedved hits the post in this game. Collars had an effort saved. And I think, if I remember rightly, the Dutch got a very disputed penalty in the last minute. And then the Czechs played well against the French as well, but lost the game 2-1 again, just didn't take their chances. Denmark weren't very good in this tournament, lost both games 3-0. And yeah, you could sense that the Netherlands and the French were going to be pretty strong.
Yeah, I mean, I reckon with the home advantage and everything, I thought the Dutch were going to go on and win the tournament, especially when they beat France in that group game. The Frank de Boer free kick in that game is a beauty. That was back in the days, I still like Frank de Boer before he left Barcelona. But I used to have a Frank de Boer shot, his name on the back, and then that disappeared mysteriously when he came for Rangers. Wonder why.
But yeah, I was the same as Chris. I thought that that's who was going to, that was my favourites for winning the tournament, and it was especially the way they started it. And you looked at the squad, apart from Van Vossen, and thought, yeah, I can see this team. You obviously you knew Italy, and you knew, more importantly, France were obviously going to be, hard to the team to beat. I don't know if I did or didn't fancy Germany. I obviously I didn't think they would get put out as early as they did. Never fancied England. And yet, as I say, Spain were always that kind of plucky team that never actually got beyond the kind of semi-final stage. So
For me, the Dutch probably should have won it, but the Dutch got unstuck the way the Union usually got unstuck. The English always go on about how they're rotten at penalties. I think the Dutch have got just as bad a record.
they have.
Yeah, the record's terrible. I mean, to be fair, out of the four semi-finalists, every one of them, that I think you could make a good case for, say, they were worthy, potential worthy winners, because we've talked about Portugal, how good they were. France obviously going to win it, and they also had a top team. Italy were really good in this tournament. Totti delivered in this tournament. And of course, the Netherlands had Kluivert up front. And I mean, apart from France, they'll stroll through the quarterfinals. France had to rely on Raul missing a penalty in the last minute for Spain. But the two semi-finals were interesting for different reasons. I mean, I thought Nuno Gomes's goal for Portugal in the semi-final was incredible. But then they had the penalty decision. It probably is the right decision, but I remember at the time it being so contentious.
Yeah, I suppose the one thing that I remember throughout this these two tournaments, and obviously your World Cup 2006 of France 98, is that Zidane, in the big moments, the big times that you needed Zidane, he actually stood up and he was always there. Obviously the headbutt right at the end of his career, and the World Cup of 2006 is a kind of different thing for being there, but I think that's what France had that no other team probably had in that era, was somebody who would just pull, especially the European teams, who just pull them up by the socks and take them along with them. And sometimes they needed that, and Zidane seemed to always be there for when they did need that.
Yeah, I think that ultimately, I think that was the difference, is that France could pull that out at the last minute. And just as John said, this was probably the tournament for having the strongest semi-final, because there was four brilliant teams in it, and any one of them would have been a worthy winner. But those moments, as you say, like Zidane will come on to the final, they did it just when they need to, and that's why they finished with the trophy.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, a lot of big players stood up, and that's which makes it great as well. I mean, that Italy Netherlands game, I mean, that was the Dutch destruction. As you say, five penalties were missed in this game. 2 90 minutes, one by De Boer and one by Kluivert. Kluivert's a little unlucky because he hits the post. And then in the shootout, Frank De Boer steps in and think, well, surely he's going to atone for it. Nope. Jaap Stam. Oh, that ball's still travelling.
I think it's come down yet.
It's gone round the world about 20 million times.
Yeah. My favourite headline comes from this game. Italy had their Totti and Netherlands had their Bosvelt, because Totti's penalty was extraordinary, and yeah, Bosvelt's the
Yeah,
one that missed it.
Totti, if I ever need somebody to score a penalty and to keep me alive, then Francesco Totti's probably the person I would pick. I've seen him. There was a video, I don't know if it's still on YouTube, but he was training. I don't know if it was either Italy or Roma, and he just ran up, twirled, back heeled it in off the post, and then you see what he does there against the and you're like, right, okay, if he's able just to stay that cool in any circumstance, then for me he's the person that's needs to take my penalties. There's a few players out there like Pirlo and Letizia and stuff like that, but I think Totti, for just the absolute class of the man, I think I would just get him to take a penalty for me.
To dispute that. So some of the greatest players I remember taking penalties. I've definitely seen them miss them, but I think Totti's a good shout for, if your life depends on it, it's a penalty. Aye, go for it.
Yeah, definitely. And in the final now, me and a few mates put on one of the predictor challenges, right? So at the start of the tournament, and I think most people had the Dutch and the French in the final, and of course, and some had Holland to win and some had France, but now I had Holland, so I was like joint top with a couple of people, but I needed to put a prediction of Italy winning, for in order to win this competition, and it was just like a few quid at the time, and I predicted 1-0, and it was 1-0 going obviously into stoppage. So I'm thinking, yes, I'm going to win this, and then, but then Del Piero missed a couple of great chances. I still believe he cost me that. but then obviously Biltor scores that dramatic equaliser in the 94th minute, and then Italy are sunk, and France go in for the kill and win it outright. And what a strike that was from Trezeguet.
Oh, but I mean, this was a year of the golden goal. So, like, he scores that, it's done. That's the game over. And what a way to end that. I mean, that is a terrific strike. Trezeguet was a fantastic. I think Trezeguet is one of the most underrated strikers that I've ever seen. And I mean, that's. I mean, I don't think as many people don't rate him. It's just he never seems to get the credit he
He just seems
deserves.
to be forgotten about, doesn't he? That's the
Yeah.
thing.
Yeah, I mean, like the goal he got in this game was tremendous. I mean, I remember him coming on at Celtic Park in the Champions League the following year, and that was a great Celtic 4-3 game. And I was packing it when he was still on the park because I knew what he was capable of, and he did score an equaliser, which was ruled on it for offside, and it was very tight.
Yeah, you're right. Now, thinking about it, people, I don't think people give a hell of enough credit. Because obviously, he spent his peak years at Juventus, did wonderful things with them, and obviously won the World Cup and the Euros with France. And he had pretty much everything you'd want out of a centre forward. A bit of pace, he could hold up the ball. He had a great finish, as the final proved. Yeah, you just don't hear a wee bit like Pippo Inzaghi as well. You don't hear enough getting said about their goal scoring records and their abilities. Yeah, Trezeguet was a fantastic player. I remember first time I saw Trezeguet got off piste was it was him and Henri against Man United for Monaco. Is it 96, 97? Was that kind of quarter final stages of the Champions League at the time, and they destroyed. They were both teenagers. It might have been 97, probably the year before the World Cup, or maybe the 97, 98 season, and they destroyed Man United, and that's how they probably got into the World Cup squad. And yeah, Trezeguet was fantastic.
But my favourite thing about that goal was I was up in the sport bar in Stirling watching the game, and that was like midway through university or something. I didn't go to Stirling Uni, I went to Glasgow Uni, but it was the summer, so I was back home. And I was up with a few mates, and like obviously when the game got into extra time, it was time to go to the bar again and just get to the end of extra time. And what was a telly behind the bar, and I'm watching what's happening. So I see Trezeguet just whack it in the net, and I'm paying the barman, and I just like amazing, and he just takes it out of my hand and goes away. I never actually handed it over to me. Just I was just because I was standing there with it. It just went, I'll just take it.
Yeah, it's still not my favourite Trezeguet moment. My favourite one was when he was crying after James McFadden scored in 2007. But I think he'll have got over that in his career, to be fair. In terms of the team of the tournament, I mean, so Toldo in goal. Now, Toldo was supposed to be backup, but Buffon got injured just before the tournament. Back four was Thuram, Cannavaro, Blount, Maldini. Midfield was Figo, Vieira, Zidane, Davids, and up front, Kluivert-Totti. That's a pretty good team. And Savo Milosevic, joint top goal scorer, doesn't make
We discussed why. That's because he
it.
was just scored tap into like I think that's one of probably the best teams of the tournament you'll probably find. The strength and depth in that 1-11's quite something.
Yeah, I mean, there's nobody outside the semi-finals of that, and even the two semi-finals have got like one and two each. So yeah, it's a tremendous team, and you're right. I mean, Kluivert-Totti up front, but well, doesn't get a look in.
Well, I didn't get many replies on Twitter. Sorry, Elon, it will always be Twitter. So the one that I did get was from Craig Sitter saying getting his favourite moments of the two tournaments, getting accused of being racist for supporting Germany, Romania, and Portugal over England and Greece, so much Greece. And My mate Tony says that the combination of kits from Euro 2000 and 2004, he says that the Euro 2000 ones were wins that hands down. Adidas and Nike templates were far better. Standouts include Holland, Sweden, Portugal, and Italy. He'll be kind of throwing a mention of Portugal 2004 kit, which was a decent one. I went through a stage of buying a foreign top for a major tournament. I didn't for Euro 2000 for whatever reason, but for 2004 I went with Sweden away, actually, the blue one. It was blue and yellow. It was actually quite nice.
I had the Portugal one that the guy was talking about at 2004. Obviously, I was going to Portugal for the tournament, so it seemed quite fitting to get the top.
I don't think I started buying the foreign tops until the next tournament, the World Cup. I think I ended up with the Brazil ones that year. But, I ended up, but yeah, like I say, if I was getting one, that's quite a bit of Dutch one. I know it was a bit of an odd one for a Celtic fan. I like the orange top, but it was class. I like that, just that black trim just really made it. And the fact it was such a good Dutch side as well. Probably one of the best Dutch sides, not even in.
Yeah.
Have a lot of them.
The Portugal top I bought was in between these two terms. It's the World Cup one. I thought it was a really smart one, and they did pitch in that, of course. So, anyway, Chris, what was the memories like on the SFF group chat when we asked for their memories of Euro 2000 and Euro 2004?
We're actually right, talking about the right tournament, yeah. So, yeah, Robert John says, I remember a disappointment with Italy using France in the final of 2000. Looked like they had that one, then got hit by injury time, and lost a golden goal too. And there's more about 2004 than there is about 2000, to be honest. And obviously 88 and 2012 as well. Jeff says 2000 was the best for unpredictability, which I wouldn't have agreed with, but I thought it was probably more like 2004.
I suppose where I get where he's coming from, because if you look at that Yugoslavia Spain game. No, he's got a point. When you look at the Slovenia Yugoslavia game, that Slovenia went 3-0 up. He has a point in some ways.
Germany and England getting put out early and things like that as well. Portugal, although as we discussed on our fine team, I don't think they were really fancied to go on the way they did in that tournament. It's funny, but I totally forgot how good this tournament was until I looked back on it. And you said to yourself, John, about the amount of goals and everything that was scored, but my main memory of it was always Holland, the Dutch and the supporters and Jaap Stam's penalty miss, and just how it just kept on going.
Yeah, that was a shocker for you.
Nah, I mean, for me, I'm the same. I didn't remember just how good a tournament it was, other than England and Germany getting papped out. The Phil Neville giving away the penalty in the last minute of the remaining game. I hadn't realised it was that bastard Guinier that scored the penalty right enough, so that kind of ruined it a bit. And then the other thing I remember is the final. But the bit in between, see, watching back over the bits in between, it was just phenomenal. Like, it was one of the best tournaments we had.
Yeah, I just think the majority of games were just so good. You know, there's so many goals involved in so much. And the thing is, most of the big players that turned up in this tournament, as we've discussed, there's obviously one or two that did look. I don't think Real had a great tournament, for example, but I just thought it was a really entertaining tournament. And obviously the way England got played was funny. Speaking of which, Russell, when asked for his input, he just says, good and bad, coincidentally released this today. So he's thought about a podcast. And I'm not going to lie, I decided to listen to it. And it was a guy talking about 2004. And he went to 15 games in 16 days whilst he was in Portugal, I think. Fair play. So, Scott, you say you were there. Well, obviously, before we come on to talk about Scotland and stuff that we don't really want to. What games did you end up going to in year 2004?
So how big was the tournament? Is it 24 teams at that point?
Still 16, wasn't it?
Still 16.
Still 16. So it must have been a quarterfinal game. Then it would have been, and it was Denmark, Czech Republic. So yeah, and the Czech Republic team was just fantastic. I know Denmark were disappointing before that in the Euro 2000, but I think they just got blown away by the Czech team in 2004. And Nedved was just superb. Just everything went through Nedved. Obviously, Barros was the top scorer, and he was really good in that game. But Nedved was just—you could just see—you just you, your eyes were just always drawn to Nedved, even if they didn't have the ball. What he was doing, where he was running, what he was kind of saying to other players and stuff like that. He was one of those players that I always think kind of float because they're just. They're so elegant. They're so ahead of the game with their brains. There's just something different about them. They've got an aura about them. That's what I'm saying. Your eyes just get drawn to them.
We'll also talk to them about them in a wee minute, but I need to unfortunately mention that this was Scotland in another playoff. Now, we were also unlucky in 99. That is not the case here. I was at the game at Hampden. This actually prompted me to get supporters club membership because I remember queuing at 6:30 in the morning at Ticketmaster underneath Central Station, the Central Station Bridge. I was ill at the time, got my ticket, and I thought I'm going to get myself supporters club from then on. The game at Hampden was memorable, but see, if we're being realistic, looking back at it, we got lucky to get away with that 1-0
Aye.
victory. I mean, the Dutch hit
It's,
the
well,
bar a couple of times, and
the thing, because you've just reminded me of how I got my ticket. At that point in time, Scotland were sponsored by Safeway. And I went to the local Safeway up in East Kilbride, like one of the bigger Safeways. It was up in East Kilbride, and that's where I got my ticket. Now, my brother was working for Safeway at the time, so that was a bit easier than it probably should have been. But I remember that was the first game that I've ever been to that we stood up the whole game. It was just that atmosphere in Hampden, and that's why I always fought against people that said the Hampden atmosphere is rubbish. That's, it all depends on what the team is, how the team's doing. Now, could it be better? 100%, right? Of course, it could be better. I don't like the layout as such, but the atmosphere can be there and it can really push a team forward. But as you say, we were not the best team. We struggled. We were there was a lot of disconnect. But we scored a fantastic goal and we celebrated as if we were already in the tournament, and that's probably part of the problem.
Well, see, I phoned my English an English colleague who I worked with in Asda at the time, and he'd been living in Scotland for a while, and he says job done. And I thought from that moment, well, we are going to get absolutely annihilated. I mean, I remember when my mate saying to me, "Do you think we've got a chance in the Netherlands?" I said, "Well, we might get a draw, but do you see deep down, I was thinking we are going to get absolutely scudded." And yeah, see, had it we'd lost 3-1 at home and 3-0 away, you could probably accept that. But to win 1-0 and have that high and then come down to that low of 6-0 drubbing, now it didn't help that Christian Daly gets suspended and Paul Lambert was already injured. So we ended up with Gavin Rae alongside Barry Ferguson in midfield. No heart with Gavin Rae, but he's not holding ball winning midfielder. Brad Douglas had a nightmare that night. The whole defence had a nightmare. Lee Wilkie went from looking like a colossus at the weekend to getting to being absolutely brutal the second game. Yeah, everything went wrong that night. I think a lot of people tuned into Wales and Russia that night, and Wales blew it as well.
It's funny because that is probably the moment that I really, really looked back and thought we're going to regret not taking on board how good Craig Brown was as a Scotland manager. I think obviously he was there a long time, and sometimes that kind of breeds a bit of discontent anyway. But he was a fantastic Scotland manager, and it's moments like that where it kind of highlights it because. I don't think we would have lost. We probably would have lost because they are the Dutch and they have got a fantastic squad compared to us. But we would never have lost in that manner and never have lost it in that kind of margin. And it was just you just knew as soon as the first goal went in, you just knew this was going to be a long, long night.
As you said, John, it was if it had been 3-1 and 3-0, it would have felt like it was more realistic because the 6-0 was it didn't that just felt really harsh. But it just the 1-0 was a bit sort of okay, but we got away with 1-0. So if it had been if it was 6-1 aggregate, but it was a more even two sort of two leg affair, then maybe it'd have been good. I mean, like I don't remember anything that one sided. Other than a year later when we played that media British level. I was the other way around that way, that season, because everything went wrong in the first leg and everything went right in the second leg.
Yeah, that's
It
true.
was enough.
In
The
terms,
other thing I remember about this though was this tournament started, our qualifying for it started with that awful performance at the Faroes. We were 2-0 down at one
oh,
point.
why did you have to bring that up?
So
Yeah,
to
I've just
get from that
forgotten
point
about
all the way
that.
through to the playoffs and be leading after the first leg is pretty decent. And it should also be remembered that's the last time you reached the playoffs until Steve Clarke picked up.
And we had horrible strips as well.
Yeah.
It was just like
Feel it
hitting
into
Steve Barrett.
Diadora.
Oh dear.
Yeah. That was not the feel age was certainly terrible. And Diadora wasn't much better, if at all. I mean there were five SPL players at that point, so three from Celtic, two from Rangers, unsurprisingly. Petrov, Lovenkranz, Larsson, Mjällby and Frank de Boer, although a public signing for Rangers at that point was Dado Pursell, who had helped Monaco reach the Champions League final. I need to double check if Boomsong was in the squad, the French squad, because he was also lined up. There wasn't a Scottish referee. Well, there was a referee that was acting as a fourth official, Stuart Dougal, but I couldn't be bothered to find out what games he was part of, to be honest. So again, in this tournament, there's, apart from the AB approach, was there anyone that that yous were rooting for to do well in the tournament?
Again, it was Sweden. I mean, that this was a heartbreaking point with it because this is where Larsson's just left Celtic. So, and he wasn't meant to play at this tournament. He hadn't played in the qualifiers, but he got begged to come back by just about everybody, including his own boy, Jordan
That's what
Larsson,
swung
before.
it.
He's the one that swung it because you had Lennart Johansson, the UEFA president, giving awards to Celtic for their fans' behaviour in Seville the season before, using that to try and coax Larsson out of retirement. So that's how big a deal it was for Sweden to get Larsson back. And as you say, it was Jordan that swung it. So, and it ended up being worth it because he scores the goal of the tournament in what was an absolute annihilation of Bulgaria. That was a terrific game. I will come back to this, but I don't think it's goal of the tournament. It was awarded goal of the tournament, but I think there's a better goal later on.
And the other thing is, I think that is this is Henrik Larsson's like coming out tournament as well, in terms of I think this is when everybody outside of Scotland kind of went, and probably outside of Sweden as well, went, oh, actually, he's probably a much better player than we've actually given him credit for. I
What
think.
makes me laugh about that though is this is the retirement. As far as
Yeah,
he's
no,
con
exactly.
he left Celtic because he didn't want to, he wanted to go to high. He didn't want to start fading away. And
Yeah.
his retirement included, coming back to this, he played at World Cup in 2006 as well. He went to Barcelona for two seasons and won the Champions League.
And then he
Did get
played a
injured
big,
at one point, right enough.
big part of that final in the Champions League was
He
him
turned the
coming
game.
on and turning the game round. Yeah.
So he turned the game. That was 2006. He then went home to Helsingborg, had a wee holiday at Man United to help them win the league. That's some retirement.
No.
Is this tournament where everybody's like, oh, he should have probably been playing in a better league, as they would call it, before now? And you're like, he was always great. Do you remember you and his UEFA Cup record? It always was there, but he just for whatever. I know teams did try. It was a bit like Laudrup. They did have kind of tentative approaches, and he wasn't interested and stuff. But he was, and he showed it in that tournament. He was class. It was fantastic.
The season under Martin O'Neill is what really made Larsson. So he was good before that, and then obviously had the leg break and was just back for that at Euro 2000. But then when Martin O'Neill comes in, he scores like 53 goals. He's a Golden Boot winner. He takes Celtic to Seville a couple of seasons later. He's just come off the back of this tournament where he helped Celtic beat Barcelona, which I know that ended up happening again, but and it was impressive first time as well. He didn't score, but he set up Alan Thompson for the only goal of the game. So he's come off the back of like just what was absolute peak Larsson. Went into this tournament and just carried it on, as you say. Let's say he scored goal of the tournament. That was his. Was that the first goal or second goal? Because he scored two in a minute in this game.
Second,
Is that the
second.
second?
Freddie Ljungberg got the first goal.
So he scored the second and third then, Larsson, because he got two.
And the third, because the thing is about to kind of give you the his gravitas was so big. That his apprentice was Zlatan, who was happily his apprentice. Do you know what I mean? You don't see much in Zlatan's career of being kind of worshipping somebody else.
That to me says it all. I have never known Zlatan to be humble about anything except that he was him, it was better.
Ibrahimovic does score some goal in this game in
Yeah,
the game
he
against
does.
Italy. It's an outrageous whooping back heel over the end of the net. And then comes, I always find it hilarious that Italy cry about a conspiracy, a major tournament. And this one, there was a great carve up, allegedly, because Sweden and Denmark, if they drew two each and they'd never done it before, it would put Italy out regardless of the result. Although I think, looking at the goal difference, Sweden and Denmark had goal difference anyway. They all had 5 points, but Sweden and Denmark drawn two each, of which Mathias Johansson scores in the 89th minute after Jøndal Thomsen double. Jøndal Thomsen was a screamer of the first goal, I remember. He was outstanding this tournament too.
Think of all the strikers we've just listed here, though. This is some group. You've got Henrik Larsson, you've got Zlatan Ibrahimovic, you've got Jøndal Thomsen, and we've even talked about it earlier yet. This is a brilliant group, this. And like that was Scotland. That's Scotland 74.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same thing. If the top three all draw,
Scotland.
It's just it just comes down to how many did you pump the rubbish team up.
And do you know why Italy think it's a carve up? Because it's the sort of thing Italy would do. It's the sort of thing that they know that that's able to be done because they've done it in the past.
Because it's two Scandinavian teams at all, or either they're pals or whatever.
Yeah. It wasn't long after this that it all came out with the Italians, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
I think, I mean, Italy did have some great players, but they didn't click in this tournament for whatever reason, because I remember thinking that they could win this, but Vieri was poor in the tournament. Totti get sent off. Well, no, he got banned for spitting at a Denmark player. Del Piero didn't deliver either. They battered Sweden in a game in the first half, but didn't take their chance, and then Sweden also punished them. They just didn't do their job. But in terms of Group A, I mean, who would have thought that Portugal Greece, the opening game, would have ended up the final, as we'll talk about later. But Portugal recovered from that to get a couple of wins over Russia, and then of course Spain, and Spain get knocked out by the Greeks, courtesy of the fact that Greece managed to get a goal against Russia, which put them through in goal difference.
Was there not goal scored?
No, it was goal scored. You're right.
So this is the Greek tide that get constantly criticised for being so negative. Can't be that negative if he's been through and goal scored. Mm-hmm. Better than Spain.
It's true,
yeah.
It's funny because I've seen that. I could never. It's Spain. I mean, Spain didn't do their jobs, and that's what you have to kind of look back on. You can say this, that, and the next thing, they got lucky. But you didn't do your job. If you'd have convincingly beat teams, you wouldn't need to worry about anything else.
I mean, they've gone through with 4 points. You consider that about five.
That's it.
Yeah, and the thing is, Spain battered Greece in that game. I remember, certainly first half, Morientes scores. They should have had two or three more, and then they switch off at a free kick, and Karisteas, who came alive in this tournament, puts the ball in the net. Incidentally, we're talking about players who ended up moving to Scottish football. I nearly forget, Takis Fikas.
Yeah, Fikas.
Was part of this Greece type team, and naturally had a very good tournament.
Did he not score in the first goal? The first game against Portugal, Fikas?
No, it was Karaganis and Basinas.
Basinas, okay.
And yeah, and then Group B. So this was England's group. They got off to a good start in terms of leading against France, but then they blow it in the last minute.
That's
France free
penalty.
Kicks outstanding.
Let's not forget England had a penalty at 1-0, which was saved.
Yeah, but Barthez from
could have went 2-0 up, and eventually they give away the free kick, which is a terrific free kick.
Oh yeah.
Incidentally, England's squad threatened to go on strike for their last qualifying game against Turkey. Because there was a protest on Rio Ferdinand being banned because he was getting investigated for the drugs test that he missed because he was moving house. Good in Rio. I heard a story that Gary Neville was leading was leading the revolt, and Alex Ferguson phoned him to say, "Gary, drop it. This is not a good look for Man United, son. Get yourselves back in that training," and obviously they got through. But yeah, they certainly switched off against France last minute, especially Gerrard with that back pass.
Oh, I don't know what's worse. The back pass is bad. The tackle by James.
Oh, the tackle's horrendous as well. Yeah, the tackle is horrendous.
Yeah, people wonder, in that era of England, like, that was the golden generation, they called it. How did they not win a major tournament? Well, they're David James and goals.
And they're just stupid. It's like, you've got this. That's why
Right,
you have it on.
yeah. David James, you're never going to win it. He's a decent Premier League goalkeeper, but he was never going to be an international number one. But the biggest thing I remember about that game is Zidane just before his penalty. Do we all remember what happened with Zidane just before his penalty?
Remind us.
And he puked up just before it.
Did
It's the
he?
first
Oh,
of the
really?
year. It was a, yeah,
Oh.
he was sick and then stood up and literally just went and stepped up and took his penalty and scored it.
I remember David Beckham being sick against Ecuador before he scored a free kick against them in 2006, but I don't remember Zidane
It's
doing it, but
I'm almost positive, and I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I think if you go back, you'll see that he's. And I don't know if it's heat. I don't know if it's just that kind of slight nervous energy or whatever. You know, because a few players have done it in various games, but yeah, that stands out.
I mean, it could have all been heat because this was Portugal in the summer. But one, I mean, I don't know where I mentioned it yet, but one of the iconic things of this tournament was that stadium that's got the big sort of, it looks like it's a quarry.
Oh yeah, was it Braga? Is it
I think it was
yeah,
Braga, aye.
Braga,
Aye,
yeah.
so that was class. Aye, that was used in the Bulgaria Denmark game.
But, I mean to be fair to England, you have to admit that Wayne Rooney was unplayable at times in this
Oh.
tournament. I mean he was unlucky not to score against France. I mean he bossed for them. He tore French apart at times in that game, won the penalty, then scores two against Switzerland, then scores two against Croatia.
I mean, this is the thing we talked about in the previous tournament, is that France were doing it at the right moment, and they continued that against England. England played really well against France, and then they bounced back really well. They beat the Swiss, big plus for them there. Hiya.
Hey.
And then the final game in the group was brilliant. England really did rally after that France defeat. The heads could have went down because of the way they lost it. I mean, when you're that close to winning it, never mind then. You see the win and you blow it yourself for the penalty, but to then come back and beat, I mean, I don't think it was one of the classic Swiss sides, but
I think they were galvanized by Rooney somewhat. I think that was a big thing for England, is that I think he was a focal point and everybody kind of surged towards him in that instance. But Lampard came into the team. You still had Scholes. Obviously, you talked about Gerrard. You had Beckham. They did have a good team. It's just, as we pointed out, their keeper was absolutely hopeless. And bottle merchants, essentially.
Even the back four, Ashley Cole, Gary Neville, Sol Campbell, and John Terry. That's a pretty good back
That's
four.
a very good
That's
back four.
solid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I don't.
one thing I'm glad to stop doing these days is one of Rooney's goals hits the post, hits the keeper in the back of the head and goes in. That's a known goal.
Yeah.
They
I
don't do
see
that
any
anymore.
more.
I mean, back in the 90s and the 2000s
Kind
and
of gave
stuff,
it to
still give it to the
the
attacker. But no, you get out. So you get like Chesney on goal. Not that I'm bothered about that one around.
Yeah, Rooney for a couple of days became the youngest scorer at European Championships, but then Johan Vilanton took that off him by scoring against France. But it didn't matter because Switzerland went out with just 1 point and Croatia went out with two. They weren't great teams, those wins. Into Group D. Again, so we had the tournament debutant in Latvia, which astounded me at this point. But they didn't play badly in the first two games, although they only lost 2-1 to a decent Czech team. And they drew with Germany. It wasn't a great Germany team, but
I mean,
still for a team like Latvia, a draw was
did they
good.
not take the lead in their first game as well? I
Yeah.
remember that they kind of shocked everybody and took the lead in the first game.
Yeah, they certainly did. They went in
Yeah,
front in that game.
you look at that group and you think, oh, group of death. But you're right, Latvia gave a good account of themselves. And then, on top of that, it's the Czechs that won it.
Yeah.
You look at that group, think, surely it's Germany and the Netherlands. But no, I mean, Yuri mentioned it on one of the throwbacks in Euro 96. What is it with the Czechs and Euros? They just come alive.
But I can still remember a lot of their players. You had Koller up front, you had Probosky, Smisa, Nedved, Baros, Heinze. They're good players. Do you know what I mean? It's funny how they kind of got peaks and troughs and stuff. A bit like ourselves, but we've never probably been that well and down with players. But yeah, they had some team that tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I'll be honest, I think the Czech Republic were the best team in this tournament, and I think they should have won it. They obviously came unstuck in the semi-final. It didn't help that Pavel Nedved get injured early in that game, and I just don't think they recovered, and Greece were obviously stuffy and, got the only go game to be won by silver goal, which was chucks after this. Yeah, they pumped Denmark in the next round as well. The Dutch were the ones that got through it, and then it's funny, we're talking about the poor penalty record. They actually win a penalty shootout in this tournament, which I think to date is their only penalty shootout win, if I
Think
recall.
you're right, yeah. See that silver goal, it may as well have been a golden goal because it was the end of the first period of extra time anyway.
Yeah, no,
that's that magical. Oh, let's replace golden goal with silver goal and give a try. It never worked. It was a failed experiment. I'm pretty sure it was in play in Seville in 2003 as well. But because the goal came in the second half extra time, it was just normal extra time. It was rubbish.
For the levels of the good game and entertaining football, it should have been Portugal, Czech Republic. That would have been a great final. But in fairness to Greece, they'll always give Greece their fairness. They did their jobs.
I mean, you mentioned how good the Czechs were. I mean, I was praising the likes of the strikers and the other group, Sweden and Denmark and all that. And when they went through, the Czechs blew them away in the quarterfinal. It was just phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I haven't already talked the group with Germany and the Netherlands up.
The thing I remember after that game, the Czech Denmark game, was walking up. It was at Porto. We were walking up outside the stadium, just walking back towards Porto City Centre, and me and my pal just started with the Flower of Scotland, and then you heard across the road further up some couple other people started joining in, and then further up again because they joined in, somebody else joined in. So that's what I'm looking forward to in Germany, is just the spontaneity of Scottish people just singing and everything else.
We go to tournaments anyway. That's one thing you realise, especially see the last tournament we're talking about, Euro 2000. See, if you look at the Yugoslavia-Spain game, there's a giant saltire by one of the goals.
Yeah, right behind that, yeah.
You always see, like, I always find what I found funny when I in the 1999 Champions League, I've seen Man United and Barcelona, is the camera pans to two Aberdeen fans wearing the new Aberdeen black top. It's always funny when you see someone wearing a Scottish top in the crowd. I'm going to be that during the Slovakia Romania game this tournament, although it is the Scotland France 98 away top, which is yellow and blue. but it's interesting you mentioned Portugal. Czech Republic would have been a good final, but did Portugal get lucky in that quarter final in terms of the disallowed goal for Sol Campbell? What rotten luck he has in major tournaments for scoring goals, because he'd won disallowed against Argentina, which I think was a foul balance here in Roa.
Yes.
I think this one is more contentious.
I think he was robbed in this one. You're right, the one against Argentina, Chira does commit a foul, so that's right, we're ruled out.
But they shouldn't just be allowed to just start the game like they did in France 98. That was hilarious. They just started the game and half the England team were already celebrating and everything else. It's England, but do we really? I mean, I think it more decisions.
No, referee was absolutely right. On the account, it was Sol Campbell.
It's just.
Yeah, I don't think it was a foul, but it was John Terry. Maybe it was a foul just because it was John Terry that was involved. But
the biggest memory I've got of that game was watching it, and my pal was down, and Rui Costa came on, and he said he's going to score. We loved Rui Costa. We used to always watch Serie A, but this was kind of getting towards the end of his career and stuff like that. And off he popped up with an absolutely incredible goal, and it was like that was he just knew it was going to happen.
Yeah,
it was just brilliant.
Yeah, because
the memorable thing about that game is the penalty shootout, and specifically the penalty spot, because Beckham takes the first penalty and the thing disintegrates. I know he looks back at it as if he's using it. He's right, though. It disintegrated. It disappeared. It was just worn turf after that. I don't know if Costa's penalty that also missed was affected by that or not, because obviously everybody takes it on that spot. But for Beckham, Beckham's hit stams in order.
And John Terry scored his, did they not?
Yes, he did.
Which he then missed in Moscow. So
funniest moment in football. or one off. But I mentioned on another podcast, the Scottish Football Show podcast, Andrew Slaven and Laura Brannan, that the goalkeeper scores the winning penalty, Ricardo, because he saves from Vassell. I remember being in the pub watching this thing. Is the goalkeeper really taking this? And he
with his gloves off.
It's a good penalty.
He took his gloves off. This was the other thing. Ricardo took his gloves off to take this or to save this penalty.
Because he was embodying Francesco Totti, he knew he was going to score, so he didn't need to have it save another penalty.
Wait, wasn't he
I think
embodying Joe Hart?
I think that's mind games. I think, you know, and if it is, then fair play to the guy. He's just like, do you know what? I'm not going to need these again. I'm going to rattle this in. There you go. Game's bogey. See you later.
Yeah. Ricardo was a terrific goalkeeper. I mean, like, I obviously remember him for the Boavista tie the year before when he was just a pain in the arse. And then, like, Larsson beat him by slicing it, let's face it, in that game in Oporto.
Yeah, definitely.
That Boavista team, I was
And they were
wanting
on.
Celtic to beat them because they were
They were
absolutely
negative and rotten,
horrid.
but
Yeah.
Ricardo was solid.
Oh, he was a good keeper. Oh, he's
So,
a fantastic
and he
keeper.
proved it again in this game. I mean, you see the two goals on the regular thing, but aye. The penalty shot was really made his name.
Yeah, and they deserve, I think that there's no doubt they deserve to win the same thing against the Netherlands, in my opinion. In terms of
Great
the
game.
you mentioned the goal, you mentioned the goal of the tournament.
Manish.
It's been Manish by a mile for me. The
Yes, that's one for me as
swervingness in
well.
the ball. I think the fact that it hits the post because it makes it more spectacular. Ben,
It's
I mean, to
a
beat Van
beautiful
der
goal.
Sar.
Yeah, a beautiful, lovely struck goal. The curve on it is amazing. There's all the slow motion replays of it as well, which always makes it even better. That's goal of the tournament for me. As much as we talked about Henrik winning it, Zlatan's goal as well was well worthy of an award. But this is, I mean, to do that in the semi final as well, it just it makes it even better. So, for me, that's a goal of the tournament. It's just, we can watch it again and again.
Exactly. And Greece get to the final with a couple of windmills as we've discussed, and then that obviously became the way in the final. Ironically, the final was the two teams that started the tournament. Now, a lot of people will criticise Greece for their defensive tactics, etc. However, it's not as if they were playing for penalties. They won their games, two of them in 90 minutes, and well, one was that silver goal thing.
They were
Now,
fantastic at set pieces. That's
they played to their
so,
strengths.
yeah.
You know, if they'd opened up, they would have been beat about 4 or 5 nothing. And it's not, you know, teams have to do what they have to do to try and win a game of football. It might not be the prettiest in the eye, but if people say that Greece are the worst side to have won a European Championship, let's fast forward to their opponents 12 years later,
Oh, they
who
were worse.
won
I
one
agree.
game in 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And
Yeah, Poland should have knocked them out and went to penalties and lost them. It pissed me off that they went on and won that tournament because they were rotten. I totally agree. They were far worse than this Greek side.
I seen something yesterday, and it was Brian Clough, and he said, "Winning the league is the best thing you can do because you can't do it by fluke. Whereas winning a tournament, you can kind of play on luck, and you can get the." And it's true, but if you still have to make the luck count, you still have to score your goals and not concede, and that's what Greece did. You know, Greece is, as you said, John, they played to their strengths. And as a Scotland supporter, I'm always, that's all I want Scotland to do is play to their strengths. And that's what we started doing under Steve Clarke. Because that's all we can do. We can't be anybody else. We can't be Brazil. We can't be Spain. We can't be France. We've got to be Scotland. And Greece, in that occasion, had to be Greece. They were well disciplined. They had a very good striker in Christias. They had a very good set piece scenario from corners, and it worked, and you can't complain against that.
And
We were just
Delas was
spoiled.
outstanding in defence, and Zagorakis got player of the tournament for his enforcer role midfield. I mean, the English media used to say, "Oh, the guy that failed at Leicester and all the rest of it." Well, he's a
Oh, they
European champ.
love
He's got one more
that.
major tournament win than any of your golden generation.
I think we were just spoiled because with so many of the tournaments that preceded this one had great attacking teams. So, like, we got all the way back to like Euro 96 in Germany and then France in 98 and the tournament we just talked about with the four semi-finalists were all great to watch in Euro 2000 and then the Brazil team in the World Cup 2002 and then we get to this. And it's an organised, well-drilled team. They're not negative, they just play to their strengths. And that because it's not that great attacking teams. It gets decried. But like you said, the Portugal team 12 years later was worse, far worse.
Yeah, the goalkeeper Nikopolidis looked like George Clooney.
Yeah.
and speaking of, on you
That's
go,
his
sorry.
biggest claim. That's his biggest claim to fame. You know, that's what people still remember. They won't really remember that he's a European championship winner, it's more, wow, he was a good looking guy. It looked a bit like George Clooney because he had greyish dark hair.
Speaking of the golden oldies, St. Greavesy made a brief cameo appearance on Fantasy Football, which I think was a mistake that show coming back that tournament. It was just not the same. I watched a couple of episodes back, and that one I sent you guys on the group chat today. I mean, Jimmy Greaves to be just gave as good as he got and just slagged them off, but Ian St. John just looked real uncomfortable.
I never got that far in that watching it because the jokes were all feeling a bit tired by that point. And I don't think they were even landing in a live studio audience. So
It was very much a program of its time, and it hit the kind of 96, kind of start of the Premier League 96 kind of year, and that's where it was of its time. And then I think bringing it back was a mistake. I think people kind of wanting it back now and all the rest of it. It was like Loaded magazine. It was like Oasis at the time and Tony Blair. It was all very much of its time. And it should have been left where it was.
I mean, I remember they brought Only Fools and Horses back a couple of years earlier, and I think if John Sullivan could revisit that, he would have just left it where them walking off in the sunset. And I think fantasy football is the same. We discussed this, Chris, on the France 98 throwback, that they brought it back then, they brought it in 98, and it just didn't fit, seem right. And they had some dodgy guests at that point as well, like Johnny Rotten and Bridget Nielsen.
I mean, the joke still landed back then. I mean, I will always remember the joining the two names together and getting things like rectal salami and things like that. Coca-Cola, that things like that. It was always great
Was
for that.
McCoy
But
was McCoy's to McCauley not better? I thought that was better in 98.
I think so, yeah. I think the format of McCoy's Macaulay worked better. I mean, the
Yeah.
fact they started it underneath the Eiffel Tower probably was a good
That
way
was the
to.
best episode of that show by far.
Yeah. That's with the infamous Eureka Johnson one, isn't it?
Yes, and Ewan
Indeed.
McGregor being absolutely steaming when he came on, which was pretty funny. And back to your 2004, the team of the tournament was Petr Cech, Zambrotta, Seitarides, Delas, Carvalho. He was a good defender, him. Zagorakis, Manish Nedved, and Barros, and two teenagers. And Wayne Rooney and Cristiano Ronaldo. And to be fair, Ronaldo started as a sub, and then he was pretty good in that tournament. But yeah, that's again a decent team. But which of the two do you think is the better team? I know it means us.
Oh, the Euro 2000 team's
Yeah,
better.
2000. Yeah.
There's more youth in that Euro 2004 one, like the Rooney and Ronaldo and even Barros in there. That's a good striking putt for us, but no, it doesn't hold a candle to the 2000 one.
No, the Euro 2000 one's superior, that's for sure.
Yeah, so there were definitely good memories of year 2000, year 2004. And who would have known that that would have been the start of Scotland's 2 decades without a major tournament? We missed it in 5 Euros. Now we're qualifying for them again, and we just got to hope that. I mean, what do you think about the fact it was mentioned on the Throwback podcast, the German guy, Matthijs Zuk, mentioned that the Euros is a wee bit watered down these days with 2014. I think the 16 team Euros and 20, and th 32 team World Cup works better, but we are where we are.
I don't know. I think it always, it, I think it, it's always going to seem better because that's what we grew up on, and that's I'm sure people who had it was just eight and all the rest of it would have preferred those tournaments. What's the World Cup got up
48.
to?
48.
Is it 48?
I'll be interested to
That
see how that works because
seems,
it's a new format again. There's obviously
yeah.
the third place teams will get through, and I
That
think that's
seems
the
quite
thing that throws it.
horrendous,
Like
but
so, when I first got into the World Cup, it was 24 teams, and so the idea of a third place team going through was it seems normal to me because of that. But
was
I
it
think we
done?
lose something when it's not just the top two going through, and you've still got a chance as a third team because there's only a few teams dropping out then. I mean, what you're
How
thinking,
did?
there's 24 teams and there's 16 going through, so there's not that many going out.
What was it in Italian 90? Was it with the Dutch and the Irish, did they not have to flip a coin to see who finished second or something?
Aye, so
Yeah, Drew
the
Watson.
Drew
Lots,
Watson,
that's what
right,
I'm
yeah.
saying. So, yeah, I think I never like it when it's not easy to get into. Like, so it's, at least with the 32 and 16, you can see like top two are going through. See, when you start adding third teams and stuff like that, and I know it could be Scotland's advantage this tournament. I just think it's always a bit more complicated than it needs to be.
But I think we just make it 32 teams for the Euros. How do we get the best of both worlds? I mean, how many is in UEFA these days? 54, 55, something?
55, yeah.
Well, 54 in Russia.
No, true. Yes, yeah, so it's 54 now. Aye, but you wonder if there'll be any more nations created out of all this. But we'll wait and see how the landscape of Europe changes. So just to round off, guys, just describe. Even though Scotland weren't in it, what does these two tournaments mean to you when you look back?
I think it's because it's like, this is sort of the end of my formative years. So like after these tournaments, I'm out in the world of work, and you start having like other things to do. So these were the like kind of last 2 Euros for me where I could just actually sit back and enjoy every single game because I wasn't working that much. But after this, it kind of disappears. So you remember them probably better than you remember the ones that come after. And ultimately, Euro 2000 was an absolutely brilliant tournament with brilliant football and lots of attacking football, and the best teams made it through. And Euro 2004 didn't quite reach that, but it had a whole different story to it. The Greek story, if you're Greek, I guess, is tremendous. If you like attacking football, maybe not so much. If you appreciate the getting the best out of what you've got, then yeah, it's a great story. So yeah, I have fond memories of both tournaments. It's just a shame we weren't at either of them.
I thought you were going to say Greek tragedy when you was talking about the entertainers not being entertained. Yeah, goals and is my main memory of Euro 2000 and supporters. You know, I know we weren't there, but you know, I kind of sometimes puts a light on other supporters, and the Dutch especially just seem to be fantastic. And then Euro 2004. It's just been there and been. That's the first time I've been abroad for a football game. That was the first time I've been to a major tournament, and it was fantastic. You know, I remember playing football with a wee tiny Adidas ball in the middle of a kind of plaza in Porto at midnight, and you know, just everybody's just there having fun and you know, celebrating football, celebrating cultures and everything else. So I think that was my main. That is and always will be my main memory of Euro 2004, and that's why it'll always be a wee bit more special for me. But the football wasn't as good in 2004 as it was in 2000, but still better than some of the other tournaments we've seen.
Yeah, it was definitely two good tournaments, without doubt. But yeah, for me, year 2000 was a better tournament, and you know, it remains my favourite tournament, even though Scotland weren't in it. Just for the fact that there was so many goals and there was so many good players turned up in some. But 2004 had some wonderful stories in it as well. So I think there are two tournaments that we can look back on with a bit of fondness. So, guys, thank you very much for coming back and having a look back at Euro 2000 and Euro 2004. And now, the next lot of series on the SFF podcast is looking forward to Euro 2024.